The following is a presentation of the Premier Dance Network.
Hi everyone, Kimberly Falker here, the founder and CEO of the Premier Dance Network, the only podcast network dedicated solely to the world of dance. And welcome back to the Balancing Point podcast and my series called Where Are They Now? On this series, I've asked some of my previous guests to send me an update on what's going on in their lives right now. And today, I'm just super excited to share with you one of my most dynamic guests, Janelle Figgins. She was one of those guests that just gave us so many valuable thoughts, words of wisdom, and unique point of view. And I honestly replayed her episode so many times to just kind of hear those nuggets of thoughts and advice and wisdom. So I look forward to allowing you guys to hear her interview again. But first, let's get caught up with what's going on with Janelle now. As you'll hear, she's made some amazing changes in her journey in dance. So let's go ahead and get caught up with Janelle.
Hello, it's Janelle Figgins coming to you live from Vernon, British Columbia, Canada. Excuse my sniffles. So let's see. Last time I spoke to you guys, I think I was still at Dance Theatre of Harlem. I had been there for 3 years. And I left in, I think, 2013. Before I left, you know, I had a lot of really, really great experiences there, a lot of great travel, a lot of great performances. My biggest accomplishment while I was there, I think, was receiving the Princess Grace Award. That's something I've always wanted to receive and be able to, I guess, put on my resume. And it came at a really interesting time. I was definitely struggling with defining my personal identity and separating myself from the rest of the pack. I was seeing my peers and colleagues, you know, put a lot of effort towards, you know, having a social media presence and getting sponsorships and, you know, getting their brand and their name out there, and that's never been something that I was good at, you know. So at that time, I made it a priority to focus on the work behind all of that. And literally, like, the moment I made that choice, I was nominated. So I just thought that was interesting, the way that that thought process aligned everything else. And even being amongst a group of people that talented, it's extremely humbling and extremely encouraging at the same time. So it's definitely blessed with that that opportunity. So after that, I decided to leave New York. New York just isn't necessarily my favorite place. Just based off of the pace and the energy. So I was definitely escaping that. I was sad to leave Dance Theatre of Harlem. That's somewhere I wanted to dance my entire life. But, you know, change is necessary. And it's one of the most important things in life, I think. So I took a chance. And I moved halfway across the country by myself to a state that I never even thought I would live in, ever, in Aspen, Colorado. But it ended up being one of the best decisions that I made. So moving out there, I joined Aspen Santa Fe Ballet, which is an amazing contemporary ballet company, one of the best contemporary ballet companies in the country, in my opinion, and in many others' opinion. So I just started making a life for myself there. The year that I moved, I was named one of Dance Magazine's top 25 to watch, which is also something that I've always wanted to say I was, and to also put on my resume. So that was super, super encouraging. And I guess I've been kind of riding that wave since then. I think that was in 2014. I have a really bad issue with dates and years, so sorry if that's not right. But since I moved to Aspen Santa Fe, Ballet in Aspen, Colorado, it's been an very interesting transition. It's just completely different from you know, where I'm from and from DC and living in New York. It's I think it's just a challenge to be in that environment when you're coming from a place with such a strong cultural identity. So that's just definitely made adjusting to the town and the city a little difficult, but you know, challenges again are welcome. So yes, I'm living there currently. Aspen Santa Fe Ballet is a bi-regional company, so we also are based in Santa Fe, New Mexico, which is another beautiful place. So I'm living in the mountains and then I'm living in the desert. So even just being in that environment and such a powerful natural environment, living amongst the mountains, is just also just energizing my spirit. So I definitely left New York with the idea of strengthening my solitude, and I definitely feel like I've been able to do that. So if you haven't done that before, do it. You know, focus on your solitude. All you got is yourself. But since then, you know, Aspen Santa Fe is it's 20 years old about, and in the 20 years of their existence, I think they've commissioned about over 30 ballets, I think that's correct. So they're just in the business of creating, which is a lot of the reason why I came out here, just to be in an environment that's constantly creating and putting out new works. So since I've been here, I think I've been a part of five different commissions by Yarma Ello, Fernando Mello, Charisse Barton, Cayetano Soto, and Alejandro Cerruto. Along with those commissions, we've been able to do pre-existing works by Yarma Ello and Alejandro Cerruto and Yuri Killian. So I've always wanted to do some work by Yuri Killian. This is one of the best places in the country to be able to do that. And we are the first American company to perform Sleepless, which we brought to the company, I think, 2 years ago. So that also makes me the first African-American dancer to do, to have a role in Sleepless. So yeah, it's been just a season of first, like 3 years of first for me. And it's just been an amazing experience. Even working with Yorma Ella, who also worked under Killian at NDT, he has commissioned a new work recently in collaboration with Joyce Yang, who's a acclaimed classical pianist. We're actually going to do a whole evening of classical piano works, and she will be playing live for all of those works that's coming to a theater near you in 2018, spring of 2018. So that's just been awesome, being able to be in the room with all these curated figures and seeing how they work, their process, and what inspires them and piques their interest. It's always really interesting just being able to talk to them about those things. Along with that, within the last year, I was able to travel to Japan with one of my mentors from D.C., Mr. Hinton Battle. Hinton Battle is a Tony Award-winning choreographer, and he has opened three schools in Japan called Hinton Battle Dance Academy. I'm a guest artist and teacher. So I'm on faculty there, so I'll be traveling to Japan a little bit often, just a little often. but my time there was really amazing. We did a tour, a teaching tour, educational outreach tour. We went to Tokyo, Fukuoka, and Osaka. It's amazing being in Japan and experiencing a different culture around the arts. It's actually really, really interesting. So that's been really informative for me as well. I've also been doing some work in Vegas within the last 4 years. I've been out there maybe 2 times a year doing some art installations and immersive dance pieces. I was a guest artist, an artist in residence at a Airstream park, a creative Airstream park for artists on the low, I guess. So that's been great, just being able to start creating and developing my own voice and creating dance works outside of the concert dance world. So that's always interesting to do a spin on the things that you already know so well. I've been featured in a few different magazines and a couple books, I've had a few features in Dance Magazine in the last few years. The latest one of those was in September. I did just an article about, it was one of those what's in your dance bag interviews, so I showed them my point shoes and my Voltaren Advil. So that was fun. I did a feature with my twin sister, Samantha Figgins, for Self Magazine, and another feature in the New York Dance Project book that came out last year. So those things have been awesome thus far. I think within the last few years or a couple of years since I last talked to you guys, a lot has changed. Like I said, moving out to Aspen has been one of the biggest changes in my life, but I don't know, I've come to have a great respect for change and making those hard decisions. I don't think you can grow without doing that, you know, and really living and embracing change, I think, just lights a little bug in you, even if you don't recognize it. So I've been very fortunate to have healthy change and to make hard decisions for my life and for my lifestyle. I think everyone knows, I mean, I would hope people know who they are and know how they want to live and the lifestyle that they want to live. So I think it's just a matter of putting the energy towards where you want to go, and then the body will follow. You know, you do the action and the self follows. So I think that's something that I've been really trying to think about just when I go about my day-to-day and when I think about my transition into my own creative world, you know. So I'm really currently thinking about what I want my career to say, you know, what the bottom line is about who I am as an artist and what it is that I'm about. I think that may be it. And again, I definitely encourage you guys to find strength in your solitude and, you know, find a good home base. You're not going to be happy anywhere if you're not happy in the one place that matters, which is in yourself. So finding the joy in whatever it is that you do is important. Finding the joy in the process is important. I always say, like, I'd rather work in silence and then let my successes speak for themselves. So really enjoy the process. The process is just for you. It's not for anyone else. It's the result and the product that's for the world and is up for interpretation. But you know the work that you've done. You know the work that your output stands behind. And that is the time spent in that process is almost more rewarding and valuable than what comes out of it. So, and as always, for you, the work that you do, the product is up for interpretation. It's once you do it, once you put it out there, it's out there for everyone, but the process is just for you. So revel in the process, and seek change and seek strength in your solitude. Those are the things that I've been living by in the last few years, and I think that they're working for me. So I guess that's it. I'm sure I'm missing some things, but that's okay. If you want to see me dance anytime soon, you can catch me on, or you can find out information about where we're touring on AspenSantaFe.com, AspenSantaFeBallet.com, excuse me. You can also email me, I don't mind that, Janelle.Figgins@Yahoo.com. And I think that's it. So peace be with you. Much love. Have a beautiful day. and yes, peace be with you.
All right, before we get started with Janelle's first interview with Balancing Point from a few years ago, let's hear from our sponsor. Body Wrappers, Angela Luzio, is happy to be the proud sponsor of the Premier Dance Network. Body Wrappers, Angela Luzio, is known for its fine total stretch tights and Angela Luzio shoes. Tyler Peck, principal dancer with the New York City Ballet, is its spokesperson and designer of Tyler Peck Designs for Premier. It takes a dancer who wears a leotard all day to know what is best in a leotard. So Tyler's beautiful original leotard designs fit perfectly, are ideal for class, rehearsal, or performance, and move well with the body and won't ride up in the back. Body Wrappers makes additional apparel for all types of dance that includes ballet, jazz, modern, lyrical, hip-hop, tap, team, liturgical, performance wear for competition and recital, as well as Angela Luzio shoes. You may view all the products at www.bodywrappers.com, or to purchase Tyler Peck Designs by Body Wrappers, go to dancewearcorner.com or your favorite online dance apparel retailer for all their products. Well, Janelle, with that, let's just go ahead and get started. And so you grew up in the D.C. area, and your older sister was that kind of how you got started in dance? Or tell me a little bit about how that started for you.
Yeah, we definitely got started through our older sister. Initially, my sister and I, Samantha, we both started training when we were three or four, you know, the age where everyone starts to just have your tutus and little cute dances and things. Yeah. But then we got out of it. We both stopped dancing at about six, and we started running track. So initially it was getting into it through my sister, through seeing her perform and dance. But we both found ourselves back to it later on individually. So that was definitely a choice that we made to get back into dance. I know I just missed it. I just missed moving and being able to use my body in a different way, and especially coming from track.
Right.
Where, you know, you're using your body as an engine, in a sense, in track, and that's definitely interesting. But being able to use that engine, but to express something, express an idea, and how you're feeling, it just feels more natural. It felt more natural, and it didn't feel right me not dancing. So we got back into dancing around like ninth grade, I guess.
Oh gosh, so it was quite a bit later, huh?
Yeah, it was much, much later. We had a really long time off from dance, and a lot of it, I think, when you as a dancer, you spend so much time indoors, and I guess we were really, really rowdy children, like we climbing all over the place. There's so many stories about just climbing trees and the molding in the house and destroying things. So we were just a little rowdy. So we had to get out. I think we just wanted to be outside.
So your sister, Dion, she's how much older than you guys?
She is 10 years older.
Oh, 10 years. Okay. So she was already quite accomplished when you went back to dance.
Yeah. By the time we started back dancing, she was in college at Goucher University in Maryland. And then she got her contract with Dance Theatre of Harlem. So she had started performing. So by the time we got back into it, we really did have someone to look at, like a career.
Sure, yeah.
A career to look at and see how it's possible
to make a career out of this. And just growing up around ballet dancers all of our lives, basically. So
is Dionne, or was she a classically ballet trained? Was that kind of her focus?
Yes. We were all classically trained here in D.C. by Sondra Fortune Green at one of the historic studios in Washington, D.C. at Jones Haywood School of Ballet. It's one of the first ballet schools for black students trained in Russian and Vaganova techniques. So we all went through that school, and by the time we came back to dance, we entered into the arts high school here in D.C., Duke Ellington School of the Arts. So we are all classically trained, but we also are trained in all genres, modern, all types of modern dance, Horton and Graham and Cunningham. So we all have an extensive dance background.
Yeah. So when you started doing track and then went back to dance, was it literally from age 6 until 9th grade that you had no dance at all?
Yeah.
Or did you kind of none? Wow. And because the only reason I ask is because a lot of my listeners, I do get a lot of questions about starting late and can you make it and what's too late? And, you know, so I think those are pressing questions for a lot of kids that find their love of, like you said, movement, maybe in their eyes too late. And so that's very inspirational that you restarted again in 9th grade.
Yeah, it's never too late. It really isn't. Like I've met so many students and my friends and peers that started late, some of them who started as a senior in high school and have amazing careers. And there's so many different paths that you can go down in dance that don't require you to have 10, 12, many years of training. And a lot of times, which is interesting, I find when I was going to auditions, I'd be in auditions with people who had been training since they were 2, yet they weren't really able to articulate the technique and weren't at a level that they should be on with all that training.
Yeah, because maybe at some point it became too rote and their heart wasn't there for the right reasons.
Yeah, they weren't in an accredited school. You know, they've been training all their lives, but actually in a way that's not beneficial.
Right. Or sometimes you see or hear of kids that maybe it's been the right place, but then they've gotten to a level where it no longer is.
Yeah. Yeah. So there's a lot of different paths that you can go on. I know I have a friend named Colin who I went to college with, and he had maybe 2 years of experience before he came to conservatory at St. Church's, and now he's choreographing in Europe. He's living in Dresden, and he's just made this really amazing life for himself. And you know, you don't have to go down one route or the route that your training is going to permit. There's so many different things, and as long as you remain passionate about that and open to all the possibilities that dance allows, you can totally have a career in dance starting late. That's totally possible. A lot of times you're better off than the people who have been training that long.
Yeah, and everything you just said really, really makes sense. You know, and I can see, I think that applies to many things in life that, you know, when you're pursuing something for the right reasons for your own personal self, you'll find more success than just not pausing and thinking, you know.
Mm-hmm. And a lot of times, like when you've been training for that long, it may become something that you actually aren't interested in, and it just becomes stale to you.
Right. And you don't know anything else, so it's hard to even articulate that you're not interested because that's all you've ever done.
Yeah, exactly. So, you know, starting late was awesome because I got to see a lot of different things that I could do and that I was capable of. Like during that time, I really was able to foster in my discipline in track and sports and, you know, find a love for that. And also just in literature and writing, like I'm really interested in writing and music. You know, I was in the band. My sister and I were in the band. We played, I was like first string clarinet.
Which is important because those are life skills that you'll probably tap into in your next chapter.
Yeah, exactly. And what's more of a life skill is just knowing and acknowledging that you have more potential in you for more than one thing, you know, and understanding that there's always more options available to you than what's been presented to you. So it's easy for me to step into, it was easy for me to step into dance because that's what was in front of me. That's what was presented to me. But I'm really thankful that I took time away from that to explore myself, and the other things that I'm capable of, because it made going back into dance a lot more rich for me. You know, it has a greater taste now that I know more about the world. And, you know, I was adolescent, so there's not that much about the world that I knew.
But still, you know, you had more normal experiences, you know.
Yeah, I had more normal experiences. And as a dancer now, having that appreciation, I maintain that. You know, my balance point.
Thank you.
My balance point is in maintaining that interest in everything, in every opportunity, in every book, every musical genre, everything that I'm interested in, I want to know more about. And that is what's influencing my my artistic development. That's what's influencing my personal development. That's what's influencing my intellectual development. So,
and I'm sure it shows on stage from an audience perspective.
I hope so. I think it does.
Well, it can only do that. You know, I've heard from other guests that it's important to have real life experiences outside of the studio so that when you're doing, for instance, a classical ballet with a story behind it, you've got to be able to tell the story from your own life versus just the four walls of a studio. You've got to have had a broken heart and a fight with your friends and all of that, because how can you tell a story if you don't know it? And I
know it personally. Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think it's being an artist and being a dance artist, especially, is a joint. It's a joint conversation between you and the choreographer. You know, you're there to interpret one idea, but it's an interpretation from two separate sides. So you definitely have to be able to fulfill the idea that the choreographer has, but you also have to be able to fulfill your own personal story in that. So yeah, being open and being available to life in general is definitely a key to your artistic development. Definitely.
Well, that's really, really refreshing to hear, because oftentimes it feels that the world of those pursuing professional ballet are very streamlined, and it does make sense. Those that make it different paths, like you said, different journeys, but sometimes it feels as if, and I'm sure from my listeners' standpoint, if you have not followed path in a certain direction, you're going to be stuck at the end with nothing, which, you know, it's really nice to hear such a rich background, which leads me to the college piece, because really and truly you're a minority in my guests. Most professional, classically trained dancers don't go on to college right away. Sometimes they're doing it while they're professionally dancing, and other times they do it after they retire. But, you know, it's very nice to hear your story of doing it first and still making it. So tell me about that decision. Was it hard to, were you ever like, maybe I'll dance first and then go to college later? Or how was that decision made within yourself?
There wasn't really any question that I wasn't going to go to school. That again, was something that I saw and was presented to me. My high school was really adamant about furthering your education in that way. My older sister didn't get a chance to finish her degree because she went into she went into a company while she was still in school and never got the chance to finish it. So it wasn't really it wasn't that difficult of a decision for me personally, because I am so interested in a lot of different things, and going to school was going to prepare me better for all aspects of the of this career. You know, if I were specifically focused on being a classical dancer, then I think that would have been my trajectory to go straight into a company. But that's not. I want to be as well rounded as possible. I wanted to learn more styles than what I had already under my belt. And again, I just wanted that experience. College definitely opened my mind up to so many different things. Like, our slogan was Think Wide Open at SUNY Purchase. And it's a great school, by the way, for the listeners. Great, great school.
Was it a tough decision on where you wanted to go to school? Because you wanted to focus on dance while in college?
Yeah, I did. I wanted to focus on dance while in college. And I only auditioned for two schools, actually. I only auditioned for Juilliard and SUNY Purchase. I got into SUNY Purchase. So that was, it was pretty simple.
So there you're
doing. For me, it was really pretty simple.
Now, how did you know about SUNY Purchase being a good fit from the dance perspective? And I only ask that because that's another common question that I receive, is how do you know where to go to school if you want to pursue dance, but don't know exactly in what capacity?
SUNY Purchase. Well, there were a couple of girls that who went to my high school at Duke Ellington who went on to SUNY Purchase, or a few people that went to SUNY Purchase. And I, you know, heard from them, their experiences, that they focus a lot on a wide variety of dance. And in my training in high school, I did Vaganova and Horton and African, and that was it. But also there, I only learned about a specific side of dance, and I didn't have that extra exposure to all these other companies. Like, there were so many companies that I had never even heard about, so many different styles of dance. Like, I didn't know anything about Cunningham. I didn't know anything about Graham, Lamone, all of those things. So seeing how it totally opened up their mind to the world of dance was definitely something that I was interested in. SUNY Purchase is open. You know, you don't have to have like years and years and years of experience to go there. They're really there to foster and nurture artists that want to really invest in their creativity rather than in strictly their technique. While they do really produce awesome dancers, like, everyone from my class at SUNY Purchase is doing so well, and everyone has amazing jobs and all of it, like major companies. But yeah, going to Purchase was definitely my number one option, just because of how diverse it is.
When you say that your classmates went on, so people didn't go there to major in dance to open studios or to teach. They kind of went there to dance to learn how to be
in the field, dance professionally. Yeah, so it's not, the program is, it's fostered for a lot of different things, which was really interesting. As a dance major, you have the option of choosing between taking more ballet classes or more modern classes, but you have to take all of them. And yeah, the emphasis is on getting us jobs in the field. I think everyone at some point in their career as dancers are going to teach. It's something that's going to happen. But we're definitely there to dance in the field. So like, I have friends now, I'm in Dance Theatre of Harlem. I have friends that are in Bill T. Jones and Merce Cunningham company. A few people just got into the Graham company. Everyone's doing really, really well. And my best friend of mine has her own company now. So there's a program for, you know, dance production. Arts administration is a program specifically for composition, which everyone has to take, but you can be a comp major and focus on choreography, which has produced awesome choreographers. We had Sidra Bell is a major choreographer that came out of the Purchase MFA program. A few other choreographers that I'm losing at the top of my mind right now, but you have the composition program and you have the ballet program. all of which are very, very strong and produce awesome dancers and awesome choreographers and awesome creators. So that's really what got me hooked on Purchase, and it's beautiful. It's just in the middle of nowhere. It's in the forest, and all you do is dance. It's awesome. Like, it's a dance.
Then what about like the rest of the campus or the rest of the students? You know, did you have kind of a traditional college experience too, or?
Yeah, it's a liberal arts college. So, I mean, we didn't have like sororities and fraternities. I think everyone at Purchase was a little too open-minded for that. they tried that, but it didn't work. We do definitely have a sports program that they're putting a lot of emphasis on now, which in a way is a little disheartening because, you know, we want money for the arts. So
right.
You can put more emphasis on sports at a school where no one goes to that school for the sports program, I don't think. Purchase, yeah, it's a liberal arts college. They have all of the conservatories are top notch. The music conservatory, visual arts conservatory just produce awesome, awesome artists and actors and musicians all the time. So I think Purchase is all around an arts haven. It really is. It's beautiful, and it nurtures talent like none other. And I'm so grateful to have gone there. I don't think I appreciated it as much as while I was there as I do now.
I know. Isn't that the way life is, though?
Certainly is the way life is, because I was struggling while I was there. But
you were struggling in what way?
I think, how was I struggling? It's just that thing with anything that you're doing that you love, it takes you in so many different directions. And I think that because Purchase was so isolated, that it can become a little bit of a, just this little, like, this, I don't even know how to describe it. It becomes routine. You see the same people all the time. And it's just, you're literally in the middle of nowhere, kind of. So that in itself, being in that routine, can become a little stagnant, but again, think wide open and do your, and focus on your art. So, I mean, it's fine, but anything that you do, well, anything in the arts is going to really involve a deep understanding of yourself and of your soul. Like, anything that involves your soul is going to take you to so many different places, emotionally and mentally. So being at Purchase and being in an isolated situation like that, and even still being in a company, being in just being an artist, period. If you're doing it passionately and you're doing it from the inside of yourself, from your gut, you're going to feel the ups and the downs. And that's just a part of being an artist. And knowing how to cope with that, and actually really feeling the ups and the downs, feeling the downs as much as you feel the ups, that's what's going to make you a more interesting artist and a more interesting person. So I struggled then with that, and I struggled with that now. I think anyone who's passionately in the arts, as I am, is going to struggle with that at some point. If not, I don't know if you're really in the arts.
Right, good point. But I think also, you know, in life, in any of those kind of, like you said, the soulful moments, the lessons are often learned retrospectively, kind of like what you're doing now. You're looking back on how great it was, but in the moment. And that's the way, you know, it is as a parent when you're in the craziness of the toddler stage. And then now you look at families with toddlers like, oh, why didn't I appreciate it differently?
And that's just a maturity.
That's just life, I think.
Yeah. You know? Yeah, that's just with coming with maturity.
It's true.
With age comes like detachment from youthful folly, I guess. And you can really look back at that and see it in a way that you weren't able to while you were in it. So
that's true.
So all the things that I was feeling there that I sometimes find myself feeling now I'm more prepared for because I am detached from that person that I was, and this person that I am now is just, yeah, is, I'm just really more prepared for everything. Right.
So your twin sister went to SUNY as well?
Yes.
Okay. And then what about in the summer when you're in college? What do you do for training?
In the summer during college, a lot of times I came home and trained. I really only trained about maybe after my freshman and sophomore year. I came home and worked because college is not free. So I worked and I worked and I worked. Thankfully, I have good rapport with a lot of studios here, so I was able to take classes at my old school, and I started teaching while I was in college. And teaching is another level of training. It really is.
Right, I can see that.
It really, really is. Like when I'm teaching, I am re-educating myself. I'm finding something new. I'm realizing that I'm actually doing something wrong because I'm telling someone else how to do that. When I was in D.C., when I came home from school, I went into classes at Maryland Youth Ballet. And I took classes. That's about it. I took classes at Maryland Youth Ballet. But by the time I got out of my junior year, I started working professionally. And that's the thing about, that's the thing about Purchase, is that they really allow you and emphasize your networking skills. There's not a moment where you're not thinking about when and how you can get a job. That's the whole point of it. So my first professional experience was after my junior year of college, and my older sister was working on this movie called Bolden, which has not come out yet after all these years. She was working on this movie, Bolden, based on one of the first jazz musicians, Buddy Bolden, and it was based in New Orleans. So she was doing that in North Carolina, and she sent them, I guess, a reel of my sister and I, and they were like, you guys need to come down here.
How fun.
So we got this call on a Thursday, and they were like, we're going to fly you out the next day. And so I was like, whoa.
I'm not ready.
and that summer was the first summer I was like, I was living in New York. That was my first summer living alone in New York because I was living in my sister's apartment while she was shooting a movie. So, that's how that happened. Anyway, so we get this call. We're like, we're going to fly you down tomorrow. Are you guys ready? Da, da, da. So we fly out the next day. We think we're going to be down there for a week. We end up spending the whole summer in North Carolina shooting this movie and dancing. So that was our first professional experience. And that, in a sense, was training. That was serious training. It was. That's something that we didn't really train for, really. I mean, that was a commercial gig, which is completely different from concert dance. Like Purchase is really a concert dance school. Doing that was a whole another type of awareness, a whole new introduction into something a lot more lucrative.
Keep that on the back burner.
That's the one. So that was a really good learning experience there, and so now I know about a whole nother aspect of dance and how you can take dance and really make a lot of money with that for later on down the line. I think now I'm focused on concert dance, but I do know that is possible.
Yeah, because, in the real world of dance, it's not like professional sports, unfortunately.
I think it's really sad.
It doesn't make sense in many ways. But
it makes absolutely no sense to me. I watch these football games, and I think I'm stronger than most football players.
Well, isn't it on your website where they have that little diagram that's just really, really cute. I was going to cut and paste it onto your show notes page where it shows the most athletic, strenuous sports, and bullfighting is number one, and then ballet dancing is number two, and then football playing is number three.
Exactly. We are athletes. We are athletes. And anyone who says otherwise is foolish. So when I see these men on TV and how much they're getting paid, I just can't believe it. And I feel hurt because I feel like what we're doing is just so much more important.
It's true.
It's just so much more important because, I mean, that football and sports in general, I guess it is something that brings the nation together and unifies us in that sense. But is it really all that culturally enriching?
Not. It doesn't make the audience weep, but at the same time, I guess
it does touch you because you become emotionally involved. Men do.
Yeah.
People become emotionally involved in the sports and they are, it is an art in a sense. It's a science.
Sure.
It's an art. But I just don't know exactly what they're saying. If there's a real message socially and like economically, spiritually.
Well, it just seems crazy that nowhere in the world, you know, is ballet recognized financially to the degree it should be.
Yeah,
in my opinion.
I mean, Europe has a pretty good hold on that. I think the way they fund the arts is similar to how they fund sports. But not as similar, but they definitely have a greater appreciation for it than we do. Yeah, I would just like to get paid as much as a football player does.
What I found so amazing is that every single person that I interview, you know, it's never even, money's not a part of it. You know, they would choose to do it no matter what. And so in this day and age, there's very few people that I talk to in my day amongst my peers that are doing what they want to do day in, day out. They're not waking up in the morning doing what they're passionate about. But then on top of that, you know, if money were not the object, most people would not be doing what they're doing. So it's just, that's one of my favorite pieces of this whole podcast is being able to talk to people that are living their lives on purpose. And that's rare to find in this day and age.
It is, and it is a beautiful thing. Like, dancers really do sacrifice so much in order to do what it is that they love, and while as beautiful as that is, it's also a little hindering because we as a whole do not demand that we get paid this much because we love it so much, you know. And that's it's awesome. We will do it regardless because it's what's in our hearts. But I feel like because a lot of the reason why we aren't paid as much as we should be is because we allow it. We allow it because we love it so much. Like at some point we're going to, if we really want to be recognized financially the way that we should be, we're going to have to not dance or just stand up for that. And that's going to hurt a lot of us because that's what we love to do. But it's just a little bit ridiculous that we aren't getting paid what we should be. And yeah, it's just because we'll do it anyway. And people
know that. That's true.
And people know that and take advantage of that. So to the listeners, know your worth. And that's another like really big thing that I learned, like especially after shooting that movie, is I really got an understanding of how much I'm worth, like how much someone is willing to pay to have me a part of their process. And after that, I mean, I still took jobs because I love it and because I was still in school and I'm just getting my foot in the door. But that really, really opened my eyes up to how much I should be getting paid and how I should be getting treated. A lot of people take advantage of dancers because they don't know any better, and because they want to dance and they need a job and all of these things. But you really, really have to find yourself in a situation where you're going to understand how much you're actually worth and how much you're willing to put up with for what you want to do. And the moment that you know that, realize that, and demand and won't demand for anything else, the more, actually, the more awesome opportunities are going to present to you, because you know your worth and you are confident about your work and the work that you've put in for all these years. Having someone take advantage of you in that way is just not an option, because you don't allow it to be.
Well, that's great advice.
That is. I just gave it to myself. I forgot.
Good reminder. Uh-oh, we're going to wait till you go to work tomorrow. So after college, what was your path with winding up at Dance Theater of Harlem?
Well, winding up at Dance Theater, well, my older sister was in the company. She was in the company before the hiatus in 2004. They weren't able to sustain the company at that time. But the good thing was that they kept the school open. They were really adamant about keeping the school open and continuing to, foster that talent. I'm grateful for that, because I was able to go to that school. So I was technically involved in Dance Theater of Harlem my entire life. Again, I grew up with the company. That was the first company that I saw perform. I saw them at the Kennedy Center. I think I was about 12. My sister was in the company. I saw them at the Kennedy Center. I saw them do Apollo, and I fell in love, absolutely in love. And that from then on, I wanted to be in DTH. And, you know, as I grew up, you know, I saw other companies that I was interested in, but still I was like, you know, I'm going to be in DTH at some point. That's going to happen. And so after school, I took a year off. I did a summer program called Springboard Dance Montreal, which is really important for your listeners because it's the most amazing program ever. I'll tell you more about that later. Out of Springboard, I got a job in Montreal. I did that for a year, and then the company came back. I mean, I did that for a few months, and then the company came back. They announced that they were coming back for 2013, and I found myself at that audition, and I found myself at DTH. So, I mean, I think it helps that I was in the school a lot. They had a residency program in D.C. at the Kennedy Center, so I did that for the majority of my time in high school. I did their summer programs, and so they knew me and my family, so... it was just a matter of auditioning and showing my face and being ready and prepared for what I've always wanted. So that's how I found myself there. I'm so happy I did, you know. They're in New York. I have a great support system in New York. I have all my friends from college. I have my sister and all of her friends that were in the company and all of her friends in dance period that act as a mentors for me. And not only me and all of my friends go to my sister and my sister's friends for advice. It's kind of crazy. She's like dance guru. she is. So, I mean, it just was a perfect fit. And I think it's a perfect place for me to really start my career and just really begin performing and finding out who I am as an artist on the stage. So it's great. And we just travel. And I love it.
So they've only been back together then for a little.
2 seasons.
Okay. So they're really making a splash though. I'm seeing a lot of great things.
Yeah, we're trying to.
I should say you, not them, but you're part of it.
We are all together making a splash. But as a company, we all have one goal and one mission, and that's to make ballet as equal opportunity as possible, and to just make amazing art and excellent and brilliant moments on stage. And I think we're really finding our niche in that. And I think what was awesome about how we started and how we start every year is we have our residency program in Martha's Vineyard. So we have about, I think it's 2 weeks. It's 2 weeks at the beginning of August. And the whole company goes and we live in these awesome houses at the Martha's Vineyard Arts project. It's amazing, and we bond. There's like, so there's two houses, and it's beautiful. And both houses have studios, like fully equipped studios. One house has a like Pilates and like gym room at the bottom. Each house has rooms and everything. So we all stay in these houses, and we just create for the first 2 weeks of our season. We create new rep. We bring back old rep. We just rehearse and create for these 2 weeks, and it's beautiful. And we just bond together. It's just a time for us to really unify at the beginning of the year. And that's really when the company members just clicked. It was amazing. I had never been around a group of people as smart and as talented and really who really have that interest in being well-rounded people and well-rounded dancers. So I'm really, really happy with the group of people that I'm dancing with. I really am. They inspire me every day. And we're just one big happy family.
Well, I think that after my listeners hear this interview, there's going to be a whole bunch of people trying to get in. It sounds amazing.
That's really one of the best parts of the year is spending time in Martha's Vineyard. Can you just have access to studios at all hours of the day?
Wow. So then you guys are going to Jacob's Pillow this summer, huh?
Yes. We were actually there last year also. We are really blessed, again, to be there. That's another awesome place for dancers. And, yeah, Jacob's Pillow is awesome.
Oh, I've never been, but I've watched videos of dances there, and it's just outstanding environment.
Outstanding. And just walking on the grounds, it's, you can feel the history.
Oh, that's so neat.
In there. Really, I actually got the opportunity to dance there while I was at Purchase, and it was the most amazing experience. We were there for a day, and we got to perform on their outdoor stage, and we were doing Serenade. We were doing Serenade, and it was beautiful. The sun was going down, and at the beginning of Serenade, all the women have their hands up, kind of as if they're blocking the sun out of their eye. And as we begin the piece and the music comes on, an eagle flies across the back. Oh, it was amazing.
You couldn't pay for that.
It was absolutely hilarious.
Oh my gosh.
But it's just a magical place like that. Like, magical things happen at Jacob's Pillow.
Oh, that's neat.
Really and truly. Some awesome moments. I had such a great time there. I feel like when I was there and performing with DTH, I was pulling up the energy from all the dance gods that have come before me. They were just,
I could see, in that kind of nature and beauty.
Yeah, it's really important being around nature like that. You get a chance to, you have your rehearsals and you perform, and then I like to just go outside and just sit in the sun, reflect a little bit, be with nature. I think that's really important also, is to connect with the universe and remain grounded in that sense. So I think it's really smart to have a dance haven like that in the middle of this beautiful forest on the mountains. Awesome.
Yeah, whoever had the wherewithal to know to do that in a lasting way really was quite brilliant.
Yeah, I agree. So that's going to be exciting. We go to Jacob's Pillow from Austria. So we actually have three more weeks off. We have the first 3 weeks in June off. And then we go to the Innsbruck Festival in Austria.
That'll be beautiful too. Talk about nature.
So exciting. Yes.
Spending like 6 weeks sitting outside in your moments all over the world.
I will have so many moments. I just want to have moments all over the world. Awesome. I will definitely be doing that. Someone said that you can ski there at this time of the year too. So
You can. It's not cheap though.
Oh, well, there you go.
But you can pull together your money.
Yes. We work together to have a good time.
Well, that's so fun.
We really, really do. We find a way out of no way. So,
To hear stories like that, it makes me wish I could do a redo. Although I had good years too, so I'm not complaining. That's for sure.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm sure. It's all beautiful. I'm excited to look back on everything that I've done. And
you're not even hardly started.
I know.
Isn't that fun?
Exactly. I'm not even started yet. So I'm really trying to like cultivate a life for myself that's going to allow me to do just amazing things and see the world and be relative and relatable.
Well, it's working so far.
I would hope so.
I don't know. Yeah. If you got any better, I don't know what would happen.
I think my main thing as of recently is just to be as like relatable as possible.
I think that's so important, especially when you're a role model in so many ways. You know, it's nice to have role models. I mean, I know that, Emma, what are your thoughts about Misty Copeland? You know, obviously is everywhere right now. And I think she's doing a great job of exposing ballet in a better way. It's hard to do, I think. And, you know, and I don't care what your background is or skin color is. I think it's, as we spoke before, it's hard to continue to put ballet in the mainstream.
Yeah, I think I love Misty. I think she's doing beautiful work. I'm so happy that she is really focused on that message, you know, that this is available for everyone. And that's something that I really believe in. The whole conversation surrounding race and ballet is an ongoing conversation, and that it's something a little bit more than that. I think ballet in itself, beyond race, is a very elitist and exclusive art form, and that's just in its history. You know, that's in the history of it, and for me, being as relatable as possible, and that doesn't even involve me being, you know, being black or any of those things. What I'm more interested in all of the dancers that I see is who they are as a person. I think kind of like what we were talking about earlier, it's so easy for dancers to be sterile, like just the same person all over the place. And it's really boring to me to see a lot. And again, that's why I like put so much emphasis on maintaining my own personal life, because I want to be as interesting a person as possible. And those experiences are what make me unique. I'm more interested in the process that people have, their what makes them unique as an individual, aside of race. And race is in there, you know, it's.
Oh yeah. It's a part of it. I mean, it's all of our stuff is a part of it, whatever it is, you know, whether it's socioeconomic or gender or skin color or, you know, all the things that get in people's way.
Mm-hmm. There's so many different things that hold a person back from what they want to do.
Yeah, I mean, I feel bad for the male dancers who are so ostracized at a young age for pursuing, you know, that's a tough one too, you know?
Yeah. But again, like what I'm interested in, and I think that's what is going to make ballet a little more open-minded, is for there to be is for dancers and to artists to all share their stories and what makes them unique. I feel like a lot of times, you know, in an effort to, when you're in companies, in an effort to, you know, be ambassadors for that company and to be representatives of ballet, a lot of times people censor themselves and censor who they are as a person because it doesn't fit this pure picture perfect idea of what a ballet dancer is supposed to be. I have an afro. My hair is not straight. I wear my afro regularly to galas and everything because that's who I am. I kind of dress a little crazy sometimes, but that's who I am. I listen to all types of music. I read all types of books. I am my own person with my own ideals, and what I try to do is to best represent the company that I'm in without censoring who I am as a person, And I feel like the more that people are honest with the unique things about themselves, the more people who aren't exposed to dance and who aren't exposed to ballet will become interested, because we're real people. We're not just dancers who stand at a bar all day trying to look like the person in front of us or beside us. We're not just one in the same, you know. If we are one in the same, it's because we're all human and we're all unique and have, you know, different things about us that make us unique. You know, the more that I think people understand that these are people who have real lives and real ideas and real opinions about things and who have a real voice and something to say, I think that in itself is going to open people up more to ballet and more to coming to the theater and seeing what real people can do. Everything, we are all great in our own right. Everything that we are comprised of is the matter of the universe. We are all capable of amazing, amazing things. And we are all similar because of that, because we are all made up of the same stuff the universe is made up of. So, you know, when I go to the theater, I want to see a person on stage. I don't want to see a ballet dancer. I don't want to see a ballerina. I want to see a person. And that's just me. I want to see a person doing amazing things who has used this technique and this language to articulate their own individual idea or that joint idea between the choreographer and between themselves. That's just me personally. I don't want to see ballet dancers. I want to see people.
No, I get that. Yeah.
I do. I want to have an experience when I go to the theater, and I hope that people have an experience when they come to see me dance, because I try my best to live in a way that every aspect of the day and every part of the world is a part of me, you know, and every moment that I've had is a moment that I'm going to take on stage with me. So everything you see on stage is everything that I've done, everything that I've been.
That's a great way to put it, too. And, you know, I think that if, you know, aspiring dancers could think like that, it might help them in their own personal artistry, you know, because too often the young aspiring dancers are so in their head about the wrong part of it all, really, you know. And it's hard, you know, that's a maturity thing.
It is hard, and it's a maturity thing, but I wish I had this understanding when I was training still, because, you know, I just had there was so many times where I was just like, you know, I don't even know if I could do this. Like, and I think that's a lot of the reason why I didn't go straight into a company, because I just didn't think that I was ready for that. I just didn't think that I had it to go into a company or that I was lacking in some sense. But knowing what I know now, and this is something I tell my students.
And that's one of the questions I would give to you in a second. That's one of my last questions. Well, it's one of them is, if you could go back in time to your 13-year-old self with what you know now, what would you tell yourself?
Oh. What would I tell myself?
Where do I start?
Yeah. Okay. We're going to be talking for a whole nother 30 minutes. If I could go back in time and talk to my 13-year-old self, I would tell her that it's just dance, you know, no one's dying, you know.
Oh my gosh, I've heard that before, and I love that so much. It's just, it makes so much sense.
You don't have anyone's hands in your life in your hands, I'm sorry. You don't have anyone's life in your hands, and it's just dance, so just dance.
Yeah, it was Ass LaCour with New York City Ballet said that too. And I love that. It's like, you know what? Get over yourself.
Get over yourself. That also. Get over yourself. Get over it.
And I think all of us need to hear that on a daily basis.
It's true.
It's, you know, I sometimes say that to my friends when they're obsessing over, you know, which couch to purchase. I'm like, come on, get over it.
Yeah.
You won't even notice that thing in a few months.
Yeah. But yeah, I think I would tell myself that it's just dance, in that you do whatever you say that you're going to do. I would tell myself to do whatever it is that I say that I'm going to do. If I say I'm going to get up in the morning and I'm going to create something, and that's something I'm struggling with right now, is just, you know, I have this creative bone in my body that that I don't utilize all the time because I'm scared of it, you know, because I don't think it's the right time for it, or I'm waiting.
Or you get into rote habits that you...
Exactly.
When you have spare spaces in your day, you fill it the way that you've been filling it, which hasn't been what you are proud of. I'm speaking to myself.
No, you're
as
speaking
I'm
to all of us. True. Yeah. And today, and that's another thing I would tell myself. You know, you always have another chance tomorrow. And that's not to say that, you know, you shouldn't do everything you can to make things happen in this day, but there's always tomorrow. It's just dance, and do what it is that you say you're going to do, because it's going to make your life and your day so much richer. And so you're going to be so much more fulfilled and happy. Like the moments that you start to feel, well, for me, yeah, when I have idle time, like right now, this right now is not idle time, but when I'm not working is when I start to feel the most like vulnerable and susceptible to my own little evil thoughts.
Well, it's that feeling of, you know, at the end of the day, you want to feel proud rather than disappointed in yourself. And it's just, it's a hard rut to get out of if you're in a pattern.
Yeah. Yeah. So, just thinking back to college and how good it felt to be creating like all the time and have always being busy in that sense, like creating really is medicine for yourself. I'm just going to tell myself so much.
You're going to be a perfect 13-year-old.
I'm sick of myself.
I'm just going to, you know, take out this little soundbite and hand it to my daughter because she doesn't listen to me, and she won't even listen to the podcast because I think I'm too much in her ear already. So I'm like, shoot, you're missing out on like the best information in the world from these people.
It's really real. All of those things, and then again, just creating. And if Janelle Figgins at 13, if what you want to do is be an artist, then what it takes to be an artist is to be actively creating. And in actively creating, you are going to find out so much more about yourself. You're going things that you're holding on to, things that just fester inside of you, you can get that stuff out if you just create and use it. And you're going to be even more relatable because you're being honest and telling your story, telling your personal story. And that's all that being an artist is telling your personal story and being active and sharing. That's all being an artist is sharing. So don't be afraid to share because you have something so special to say. That's what I would say to myself.
That's a good one. Mm-hmm. I like that.
All of those.
And I like that you put it in first person or third person. Talk to yourself.
Yes. I was actually just talking to myself.
To you, yeah. So with that same wisdom and kind of lessons learned, what advice would you give to aspiring dancers?
To aspiring dancers? To aspiring dancers, I would say... again, it's just dance. So just dance. I would also say that is for everyone. Whatever it is that you're doing, it's just that. And unless you're a doctor, you don't have anyone's life in your hands. But I would also say that everything that you are as a person is what's going to influence your artistry and your dance and what you want to say. So really, really focus on honing in and being true to who you are and what you're interested in. Never stop learning about anything else outside of dance. Be a bunhead if you want to be. But there are so many more things in this world besides ballet that is going to make ballet so much more exciting for you. So continue to learn about everything that you're interested in. Continue to be have to continue to have an awesome imagination. I don't know if I would be as excited about dance or excited about anything if I had an anemic imagination, you know?
Right.
If my mind wasn't a playground and had all these crazy colors and awesome things going on inside, I don't know what I would do. So just have an awesome imagination. Don't lose that with age. Don't lose that at all. And just dance. Just dance, you know. I think that's what I would say. That is what I just said.
Would and did. And then do you have, you've given so many great tidbits, so I don't want to even press you for more, but do you have a favorite motivational quote that you've applied in your life?
Favorite motivational quote? You know, I do have quotes, but what, yes, because we were having a conversation, we were in rehearsal with Robert Garland, our resident choreographer at Dance Theater of Harlem. And he was talking about just old school dancers and how in the moment they are when they're dancing. And he just said something in passing that I don't think anyone else really took to heart. And I kind of just extracted it from everything else that he was saying. He said, when you're really dancing, there has to be peace inside of you. And so during the New York season, we were premiering Dancing on the Front Porch of Heaven by Ulysses Dove, which is beautiful. And anyone who has seen it, you can Google it or YouTube it, and you'll be able to see the whole ballet, Dancing on the Front Porch of Heaven. And so anyone who's seen it, they know that there are three sets of really, really crazy fouetté turns. And I'm the third girl, so I have to do like double fouetté, double, a little one swivel, another double fouetté, and then another like double at the end. So it's a really crazy thing. Really complicated. You know, the curtain is down before the piece goes up, and I'm practicing my fouettés. They're not working. I'm stressing out. And, you know, I just go on the side of the stage, and I just start, I'm kind of like chanting this mantra, like, you know, there has to be peace on the inside. There has to be peace on the inside. There has to be peace on the inside. And when the curtains went up, I go out to do my fouetté. That's the best time I did those. And I was like, yeah, woo, I'm winning. And, you know, and but I applied that. And it's real, like, as a dancer, especially myself, because I have an abundance of energy when I'm dancing. And if I'm not in the right place, then that energy can be dispelled in all types of ways that isn't really constructive. So since then, since I extracted that piece of information from Mr. Garland, thank you so much. I chant that every time I go on stage or before I go on stage. I'm just in the wings. I'm like, there has to be peace on the inside.
I love that.
Even when you're on stage and you're doing something really physically demanding, I think that's what he was getting at, is that when you're in like huge, physical, exhausting movement and you're doing a lot with your body, you're all over the stage. there has to be stillness. There has to be calmness somewhere on the inside of you in order to have control over all of that. And so, or in order to be present and available and in character. So that is
a calmness somewhere. Yeah.
Yeah, it is. But it's totally possible. And it really is possible if you just really, I think that's been number one for me as of lately. That's really something that I do every time I've been performing since the New York season, is just, there has to be peace on the inside. There has to be peace on the inside. And that's every day.
And thanks everyone for tuning in to Balancing Point Podcast today. This series really has been so much fun for me, and it's great to be back in front of the microphone and not just producing all of the amazing shows on Premier Dance Network. And on that note, if you've not listened to the other shows on the Premier Dance Network, please stop by the website at premierdancenetwork.com. We love hearing from you. If you have any suggestions, questions, advice, any of that, head on over to Premier Dance Network. You can leave your comments, your questions under the Contact Us tab, or you can just listen to any of the shows from that website. So until next week, have a great day.